Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link, broadcasting from Bonn. I'm Assumpta Latus, and here are our main stories. As the world marks the World Humanitarian Day, reports say attacks on aid workers are on the increase. We speak to a humanitarian worker.
It is scary. We are all aware of the risks.
The Committee to Protect Journalists has condemned a move by the South Sudanese authorities in which they shut down a popular Juba radio station and detained its news editor.
He was released without charges. So he's back at the station, but the radio station is still off the air.
Those stories and more coming up right here at Africa Link.
Top story.
When victims of war, natural disasters, and diseases like Ebola outbreak cry out for help, they often turn to humanitarian organizations. Some call them angels, but others target them and kill them. 155 aid workers were killed across the world in 2013 alone. This is according to a report published on Tuesday by the consultancy group Humanitarian Outcomes. The report was released to coincide with World Humanitarian Day. The day was set apart to recognize their efforts. Now, with death of many people in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, the Ebola epidemic is rapidly creating a humanitarian crisis, particularly in Liberia. Julius Kanuba has more.
I am now standing at the largest Ebola treatment center in Liberia, located within the premises of the ELWA hospital outside Monrovia. What I see before me are units of tents covered with white tarpaulins. As we can hear in the background, construction works are also ongoing to expand this facility to host more Ebola patients. The International Medical Aid Organization, Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, is at the forefront of running this Ebola treatment center. Brett Anderson is MSF's field coordinator.
As of yesterday, we cleared this site in preparation for as many very large tents as we can get that will accommodate a couple of hundred people. Currently, you're looking at four tents on this side, which are for suspected Ebola patients. And at the further over is four other tents, which are for confirmed patients.
As Bright led me into this Ebola treatment facility, about eight new Ebola patients were being rushed in. They look weak, worried, and confused. Their plight has now taken on a greater dimension, says Linnis Huram, MSF coordinator in Liberia.
It is an Ebola outbreak, but it is definitely also a humanitarian crisis because there is this large number of people who are already have the disease and more will get it, unfortunately, in the weeks to come. But other than that, there's also affecting the whole health system.
The challenge of containing the Ebola virus highlights the works of humanitarian organizations as functioning health facilities are limited throughout Liberia. Mrs. Kotu Williams, who serves as Liberia Country Director of the International Non-Governmental Organization, Action Aid, says working to serve humanity is very demanding.
Well, in a post-conflict society, it's always difficult. It's definitely filled with a lot of tension. If you look at the environment, we are concerned about, you know, just the environment being safe, you know, not just safe for myself as an individual, but safe for women.
Helping to create a secure, safe environment and contain the Ebola epidemic is a tremendous dual challenge for the many committed aid workers. And it is by no means over. Here is MSF coordinator Linnis Huram again.
This is a very critical and difficult crisis that we're seeing here now. I've been here for 7 weeks and I've seen it getting worse every day that I've been here. And I think that the worst is yet to come.
A report by Julius Kanuba. Now, the Red Cross is among those humanitarian organizations that are at risk. To find out which challenges their aid workers face, I called up Thomas Glass, a public relations officer at the International Committee of the Red Cross.
Well, just like most humanitarian organizations, the dangers that we face are sometimes the lack of security guarantees, the misperceptions that sometimes certain weapon bearers have of humanitarian workers. These are issues and challenges that we face on a daily basis, places that we work.
You talked about perceptions. What kind of perceptions are they?
Well, the most important aspect, especially for us, is the fact that we work in a neutral, impartial manner in order to be able to provide assistance to the victims of armed conflict. Now we've seen, like we can see throughout the different conflicts, that sometimes there's a blurring of the lines between military, political, and humanitarian activities, which pose a real threat to humanitarian action and humanitarian workers. Humanitarian workers strive to work in close proximity to the people they're helping, and we depend on being perceived as neutral and impartial.
And what sort of protection do aid workers receive under international law, and how does this work out in practice?
International humanitarian law protects humanitarian aid workers and volunteers. International humanitarian law has been agreed upon by all states, and it's something that must be applied. So it's one thing to have the law, it's another to actually put it in practice. There's always the danger of being in the wrong place at the wrong time, but when you reach instances where aid workers are directly and deliberately targeted, it becomes a real issue. And this is something that all parties to the conflict have to respect the law and do their utmost to protect the aid workers.
And these risks we have been talking about scaring people away from volunteering for humanitarian work.
Well, they can, but at the same time, you know, humanitarian workers, aid workers, have this will and this courage to exposing themselves to the risks in order to help save lives, to help protect the people who are in need. You know, this is something which is absolutely admirable. And, you know, unfortunately, more and more are paying the price with their lives in order to save lives.
What do you think about the risks aid workers face?
Well, I think these are risks that that many of us, many of my colleagues and close friends are willing to take daily in order to provide help. I mean, it's clear that whenever we are in such situations, we take all the security precautions that we can. It's important that we're also able to protect ourselves, because otherwise we will not be able to bring the help which is much needed. It is scary. We are all aware of the risks. But we try our utmost to take the right precautions in order to be able to do our work.
I have been speaking to Thomas Glass there. The longer version of this interview is also on our webpage, which is dw.de/Africa.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
The Ebola outbreak is still making headlines. New reports by World Health Organization say the number of people dying of Ebola is still going up. But they also said 3 patients receiving an untested Ebola drug are showing signs of improvement. In Nigeria, the number of Ebola patients had dropped from 8 to 3 in the last few days following the discharge of 5 patients from the treatment center in Lagos. But with 200 people under surveillance and with a health sector in crisis, Nigeria's fight against Ebola virus is far from over. Samuel Okoya reports.
The discharge of the 5 Ebola patients was a turning point in the Ebola's care that has pervaded Nigeria since the first case was diagnosed in the country almost a month ago. For many ordinary Nigerians like Joy Agbonifo, the discharge of the patients from hospital was very good news.
I think it's a thing of the light that 5 of the Ebola patients have recovered and have been discharged from the hospital. When 4 of the Ebola patients died, it was as if we are going to lose all of them. With the recovery of these 5 patients, I think there's light at the end of the tunnel.
But that light may be farther away than imagined. About 200 people who had contact with the Ebola patients are under surveillance in Lagos to determine whether they have the virus. Their results are expected within the next 2 weeks. Lagos State Governor Babatunde Fashola said during a radio and television broadcast that the waiting period will be crucial.
This new week and the next one will be the sharpest part of the curve that we expect to negotiate. Last week, we cleared a total of 61 contacts after the 21-day surveillance, which is the known lifespan of the virus. We cautiously wait to see how many more people will be cleared and hope that there will be no new cases. Nevertheless, our strategy is to prepare for the worst by making plans to expand the facilities to take any new cases while we hope for the best.
Despite such precautions, many fear that the country will not be up to the task of handling any major Ebola outbreak if some of the 200 people under surveillance test positive. Just last week, the government sacked 16,000 striking doctors. This came as family members and friends of those with Ebola complained that the hospital for the Ebola patients was poorly equipped. Dr. Ladi Okuboboye was one of those who expressed concern.
If the sanitary things are not working properly, then you've got a problem. If you don't have the required personnel, then you've got a problem.
The government says it has put up a good fight against the Ebola virus. Of the 12 Ebola cases in Nigeria, 4 people have died, 5 have been discharged from hospital, and 3 are still receiving treatment. The true test of Nigeria's health service will only come to play if the country records more cases.
Sam Olukoya reporting. You're listening to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link.
Africa on the move.
Let's talk about computer games now. Did you know that you could now role-play African heroes? I know that gaming technology is an emerging technology that is only popular in Europe and America. But the good news is some young Africans are now trying to introduce computer games in Africa as well. They are building a huge digital comic and mobile games institution that seeks to project African superheroes based on the continent's historical events. For more, here is Isaac Kaleji reporting from Accra.
This small room in one of Ghana's lavish residential areas of East Legon serves as the business center for the emerging technology company Leti Arts. It has offices in Ghana and Kenya and develops cross-platform interactive media products based on African history and folklore, including digital comics and mobile games. Other services include software application development for companies. Co-founder and CEO of the company is Eiram Akofateria. He told me more about Leti Arts.
Currently, we are building a whole universe of game. Like, we are building a game engine. So Leti wants to be the game company that creates games for all platforms, even if you don't have internet on your phone. Mm-hmm. So that's the latest that we are building. Mm-hmm. And we are developing this with very modern tools and also proprietary in-house.
About 8 years ago, Eiram teamed up with Wesley Kirinya, one of Kenya's first game developers. They attracted the attention of the Meltwater Entrepreneurial Technology Institute, which allocated them a grant of $100,000 to begin the business. The institute provides training, mentoring, and investment for aspiring technology entrepreneurs. Here is Eiram again.
We've been passionate about games individually for a long time until in 2007 I met the founder of Meltwater. So I told him about the story there because myself and Wesley, we met online anonymously and then we worked on a project together. So he flew Wesley down from Kenya here and then we tried to start Leti Games to focus to build the African gaming industry.
Leti Arts now focuses on bringing African folklore and historic legends back to life, combined with fictional characters who, as elite superheroes, fight crime in present-day Africa. The idea is not only to entertain, but also to educate about African culture and history. It's been a tough journey, especially securing finance and getting the right talents to work on the project.
To get quality people from the diaspora, you need to pay them well. Getting very limited finance is a very challenging thing because money is the oxygen of every company, right?
Leti Arts was represented at the recent U.S. African Summit held in Washington. For Hiram and his colleagues, the dream is to project Africa with their work. He has plans to train more talented software application developers for the continent and expand beyond Kenya and Ghana.
We want to show that Africa is ready. Gaming technology or game technology is something technical enough, because for the Western world to see that Africa has also grown beyond their technical challenges. We are actually developing our game technology.
That report was by Isaac Kaleji. The Committee to Protect Journalists has condemned a move by the South Sudanese authorities in which they shut down a popular Juba radio station and detained its news editor. Over the weekend, security forces raided the Catholic-run Bakita Radio and arrested four of its staff members. The station had been airing rebel views and opinions. Tom Rhodes works with the Committee to Protect Journalists. I asked him if he were surprised by the news.
Unfortunately, no. This has sort of become a trend that we've seen heavily happening since this conflict began in mid-December last year, where any kind of media outlet which sort of covers the opposition could potentially be a target.
Does this station have a history of supporting rebels, loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar?
No, not at all. I mean, in this case, Chen David, he's the news editor, was simply citing an online report, a credible online news source known as Sudan Tribune. And I think this is what sort of irked the government at this time. You know, it is, to be fair to the government, it is a very sensitive time for them, since we do have these peace negotiations going on in Addis. Both sides are keen to show the other side as the aggressor, you know, in these peace deliberations.
Do you mean that the Bakita radio station hasn't been airing views of the government as well?
Oh, certainly. They always do that. No, I would argue that Bakita FM and the Catholic Radio News Network is one of the, if not the most professional broadcaster that is currently in operation in South Sudan. And this was what makes this closure so significant, because, you know, unlike many other radio stations, they actually have quite a decent broadcast range. For many people, they represent one of the few independent media sources out there.
And how serious a blow is this to freedom of expression in South Sudan then?
It's a serious blow because they're a major broadcaster, but it's also, unfortunately, you know, one of many blows. I mean, we've had several occasions where newspapers, the print runs, the circulations, have been seized by security. We've had security agents sort of visiting media houses, threatening reporters not to cover certain issues which they consider sensitive. So it's sort of part of a larger ugly picture, shall we say, of the crackdown on the press in South Sudan.
Now, the editor hasn't been charged, but he is still in detention. Judging by past experience, what is likely to happen to him?
Well, I actually do have some very good news. As of about an hour ago, he was released without charges. So he's back at the station, but the radio station is still off the air. So fingers are crossed that they'll security agents will give the station the green light to start broadcasting again. One can only hope and see. But I also feel that, you know, that civil society in South Sudan is starting to develop a voice and starting to react to what they consider, you know, kind of unfair treatment towards the press and others.
I was speaking to Tom Rhodes there from Nairobi.
Making a difference.
In Making a Difference this week, we'll be visiting Africa Festival. Here in Germany, almost every city hosts an Africa Festival. The aim is to change people's perception of Africa and make Africans who live here relive their culture. The first weekend of this August, the Cologne Africa Festival celebrated its 10th anniversary. For three whole days, Africans and Germans alike had been enjoying live music and delicious African food. Loveday Wright went along, and here is her report.
The sun is beating down on a busy marketplace. The smell of fried plantain drifts among the colourful fabrics and jewellery on sale. Giant pans are bubbling with vegetable stews and meat in peanut sauce. There is music coming from all directions, and drummers around the market are echoing each other's rhythms. This is Africa, but we're in Germany. Abdoulaye Eldodo is an artist from Sudan. He is a pioneer of the festival and has been taking part for the last 10 years. The festival started off small, but is now well known in the area.
The people came more and more. At the beginning, there were no more people. Immediately, the people know that, and then people are waiting for that. It is something that brings the people together, I think. Africans and non-Africans, in a multi-pot, just like Cologne here in Germany. It's a very nice thing.
Eldodo is running an art workshop here at the festival where children can make and paint models of African animals. A few colourful stalls away, more children are enthusiastically trying out circus skills under the expert guidance of Juanita Henry, a professional acrobat and educator from Tanzania.
I want to teach the kids my traditional, my things, what I am. I work at this festival now 10 years. Every time I make like an acrobatic on stage, but now I make a circus with the kids. So we come here with our juggling things, the kids they can come, they can try, every kid can try what they want, and then we make together.
It's not only the children getting involved. Adults too are enjoying a first-hand experience of African culture. Siriki Koulibaly is a musician from Burkina Faso. He runs drumming workshops so people can try making African music for themselves.
That's a drumming workshop.
The sense of the drumming workshop is to have fun. Drumming together with me. It lifts your mood and everyone really enjoys it. I have brought Africa to Germany.
Ursula Retter is one of the Germans who joined in with the drumming.
It's something like to get free from thoughts, from all. Only bang on this thing and concentrate, and yeah, it's really a great experience.
At the African dance workshop, Melanie Moser from Cologne is getting a similar feeling.
It was nice to dance. I love African dance, and sun is shining and music was good. It's more impressionant African dance, and it's really dancing with your feet and on the ground, and it gives you a lot of energy and a lot of power.
With the market stalls and workshops in full swing, and Germans and Africans alike sampling food from across the continent, the organiser of the festival, Papa Malik Diouf, explains what the Mid-Africa Festival has come to mean to the local community over the last decade.
We as Africans, we've been living here for a long time. That means we also belong here in Germany. So we have to contribute something in a way so that we can present Africa.
Einfach mal dann Afrika zu präsentieren.
A report by Loveday Wright. Making a Difference will be back the same time next week. And now a summary of what we have been covering. 155 aid workers were killed across the world in 2013 alone, says a report that was released on Tuesday to coincide with World Humanitarian Day. The World Health Organization say the number of people dying of Ebola is still rising. And we have also been hearing how gaming technology is slowly finding its feet in Africa. And that's it for this edition. Join us at the same time tomorrow for more stories. For questions or comments, drop us a line at our email address, which is feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Till tomorrow, I'm Assumpta Latus. Thanks for listening.